Tuesday morning session of the House Committee on Judiciary Subcommittee on Criminal Law. Appreciate you being here this morning. We are going to start with a public hearing on House Bill 3594. At this time, I would invite Speaker Mark Simmons and Dixie Smith, who are at the witness table. Welcome today. Appreciate you having you coming to be with us this morning. It's always a pleasure to have the Speaker of the House visit our lowly but hardworking subcommittee. Welcome this morning, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Chair Williams. It's always an honor and a pleasure to come before you. Committee doing a fine job on a diversity of issues this session, and I appreciate you making a little bit of time on the agenda today to hear House Bill 3594. And especially to have my first opportunity to testify before our new representative, Dingfelder.
Thank you.
I think it went very well. House Bill 3594 simply raises the category for a crime of driving when a license was suspended or revoked if the initial revocation was for any degree of murder, manslaughter, criminally negligent homicide, or assault with a motor vehicle. It was introduced at the request of Dixie Smith. Dixie lives in the Grand in my district and drove about 300 miles yesterday evening to be here today and testify at the hearing. This issue was brought to our attention after the death of Dixie's sister, who was struck and killed by a driver who was subsequently convicted of criminally negligent homicide and sentenced to only 18 months in prison. This bill would not affect the original sentence. However, it would affect any subsequent sentence this man receives. Should he be caught driving during the 8 years, his license will be suspended after he is released from prison. It's simply that if an individual who is already harmed or taken the life of another human being should either obey existing law or pay a much higher penalty if he should choose to disobey the law again in the future. Oregon's sentencing guidelines continue to control the sentencing of individuals based upon their prior history or nature of their crime. This bill does not change that aspect of Oregon's justice system, but it does lower the intolerance for repeat offenses. I have to admit that I think Oregon's law should change with regard to the original sentencing guidelines for these kinds of crimes, but the crime and the current budgetary environment makes it very difficult. This bill is a first step, I think a step in the right direction, and I would leave it to your wisdom. The district attorneys do like the bill. There is no, there will be some fiscal, I understand, but I think it will be minimal. And it seems to me that we should address why a person who actually kills another person receives the same penalty as someone who is simply caught using illegal drugs on the road. In the case of the individual who was sentenced, he even between the time he posted bail and had his license suspended and was tried, was caught once again out on the highway speeding. And I think we have too much tolerance for this kind of behavior. The Department of Motor Vehicles tells us that of all the drivers who have had their license suspended or revoked, 60% of those folks continue to drive. When a person is willing to use illegal drugs or even alcohol and be out on the road, we've repeatedly stated that we are not going to tolerate people out drinking and driving, but the use of illegal drugs, illicit drugs, impedes a person's ability just as much to react and to drive safely. So I think we need to be addressing this portion of the law, and I would leave it to the wisdom of the committee as far as other amendments you may suggest for the bill. I'd like to offer Dixie Smith an opportunity to say a few words.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Welcome, Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Williams and the committee. On June 28, 1999, my sister Debbie Cousins was struck and killed by Julian Lopez. At the time that he struck her, he is into a construction zone at 76 miles an hour. Braking, he had struck her at 56 miles an hour, throwing her into the oncoming vehicle, which severed her neck. During the time that the ambulance and the police was coming, Lopez stayed in his truck. He's more worried about his logbook. He never once asked if she was alive or dead. They got her off to the hospital. Unfortunately, Hermiston doesn't have a trauma center. She died an hour later. Lopez was taken over to be given a urine test. He is found to have marijuana and methamphetamines in his system. During the time he'd been in jail, and district attorney kept lowering the bail until he finally bailed out in January of 2000. In between the time that he was bailed out and trial, he received another speeding ticket, another driving while suspended. So him and his attorney asked for a trial at first with jury, then they went to the judge. Lopez admitted to doing the drugs and said that he'd done it over the weekend, but he is just extremely tired. Federal motor carrier states you will not have drugs in your system. I'm not down on the truck driver. I've been over 2 million miles myself, accident free and speeding ticket free. But the thing is that he had these drugs in his system. If you'd done them 2 days before, they still have an effect on your system. But they sequestered all the evidence, so the judge couldn't hear all the testimony that was there. The judge gave him 18 months at my request. They was hoping that the time that he was in custody be put off on good behavior time. The good behavior I asked not to happen. No good time, no good behavior time, no jail time. So he did get the full 18 months on top of what he had already served. What I'm asking is that, like Lopez and so many others that have used a vehicle as a weapon against law enforcement, against private citizens, just out of anger, out of trying to escape, being drunk on dope. A little story, my ex-husband's an alcoholic. He's been found time and time and time again. He killed a kid when he was a teenager. Same thing is that they use vehicles as weapons. They don't care. They know, just like my ex moved. Just like Lopez knows, you get slapped on the hand, you get fined, maybe a couple days in jail, and that's it. You're right back out on the street, time and time again. You go and get a false driver's license, you're right back out on the road again. It's time to stop. That's what I'm asking for.
Thank you very much, Ms. Smith, and we appreciate you making the effort to come and tell us about this incident. Members of the committee, do you have any questions for either the speaker or for Ms. Smith?
Could I please?
Yes, Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker. Good morning. I'm so sorry for your loss. What a terrible thing. Could I ask, though, if there had been sufficient jail space or time for the court to have imposed, say, up to 5 years, which you can under a C felony, if he had actually had to serve more time under that specific felony, would you be here today, or would that have satisfied you? Because it looks to me like he has served 22 months.
I'd still be here. It's time to stop.
To Metro 11.
Well, what is it exactly that you want to have happen?
What I'd like to have happen is that these repeat offenders get... have the law strong enough to let them know that we're not going to tolerate them doing it anymore. To stop them from getting in a vehicle and driving. just like Lopez, he has no respect for the law. He's already killed one person from the time he is 17 years old. For 17 years that he's had a driver's license, it has been repeatedly suspended and revoked for speeding violations and accidents. And everybody that has been convicted of this crime is right back out on the street doing the same thing.
Follow up, if I could.
Follow up.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. So what do you think would stop him? I mean, apparently the judge took away his license and put him in jail for a long period of time. We don't know what he has done since. Is he out of jail or is he still in jail?
He just went to prison.
Okay, so he's there.
He was just sentenced about 3 weeks ago.
What is it that you would... And so he's been logged into prison now. And obviously it's going to be the state prison instead of county jail because it's the 18 months.
He'll be in Ontario.
So what would you rather have happen to him besides him being in jail at the present time? And what is it that you really think should happen to this man?
It's not only him. It's that, just like Lopez, he gets out on bail and before trial gets another speeding ticket, another suspended license.
Well, that's what we call in the business is felony stupid.
Right.
Yeah.
But immediately after, I can make you 100-to-1 bet that the day he gets out of prison, he'll be right back in a car again, knowing that he has an 8-year suspended license. Who else's sister, mother, brother, or daughter is going to die? Because these people are back out here doing the same thing. The cop that's given a ticket gets assaulted. I've watched it so many times in trucks.
It is dangerous out there. You are so right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for the speaker or for Ms. Smith? Okay. Hearing none, thank you very much for coming forward. We appreciate you. We know how far you had to travel today and probably at the very early hours in order to get here, so we appreciate you doing that. Mr. Speaker, do you have anything you'd like to add before we close?
Only a comment that we have flagrant disregard for suspension of license among many individuals in the state of Oregon, and we should have consequences for that kind of behavior that at least begin to equal the danger they are causing to society. So this is a modest step, and if you would choose to amend the bill to make it stronger, that would be fine with me.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. We'll now close the public hearing on House Bill. Before I do that, is there anyone else here who, there was no one else signed up to testify. Is there anyone else who would like to come forward at this time on House Bill 3594? Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3594. We'll now go to work session on House Bill 2008. That work session, Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2008 comes to you from Speaker Simmons. Increases penalty for littering on beach. You should have a dash one amendments in front of you. Actually, the dash two. What they do on page one of the printed bill, line 21, after third license insert, except the commercial fishing license. We had testimony at our hearing that how fishing gear oftentimes can inadvertently get washed overboard, and even if it were intentional, it would be an awful harsh penalty. It's one thing for you or I to lose our angling license. It may be another thing for a fishing boat to lose theirs because it's connected with a living and making their living.
Thank you, Council. You'll recall initially, colleagues, there was a fair amount of discussion about whether or not this was going to run into a problem with federal law related to a treaty whose name, frankly, I can't recall off the top of my head. My understanding is the bill was reviewed in greater detail by legislative council. Everyone came to the conclusion that this was in fact not going to be a problem within the context of the treaty. The dash two amendments were intended to address concerns that were raised by former Representative Terry Thompson. I think there was some disagreement on the committee as to whether or not materials that were not intentionally discarded but broke free as a result of normal fishing activities would have been considered to be subject to this bill anyway, but I think there was just general agreement in the discussion that an amendment which would exempt the licenses of commercial fishing licenses from the impact of the possible penalty of this bill made some sense and bought them some comfort. So that's where we're at on the bill. Is there any discussion among committee members with respect to the bill? Anyone have any questions?
I had a question.
Representative Dingfelder.
Since I wasn't here for the hearing and just reading through this bill, I just wanted to make sure that the concerns raised by Mr. Thompson for the fishing industry were actually addressed with these amendments adequately.
He's nodding yes.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
So I think we've addressed his concerns with the adoption of the dash two amendments.
That was the only concern that I had reading through this.
Okay.
Thank you,
good.
Sure.
Anybody else? Okay, we are in work session. Chair? Representative Wilson.
I would move the dash two amendments into House Bill 2008.
Representative Wilson. I'm Williams. I'm Wilson. Representative Wilson has moved the... it's early. Has moved the adoption of the dash two amendments to House Bill 2008. Is there any discussion to his motion?
I just have one question.
Representative Vicki Walker.
I've had the pleasure of being over at Neskowin for the 4th of July, and they have fireworks on the 4th of July down on the beach, and that community is very committed to going back the next day and cleaning up after those people who have so much disregard for cleaning up after themselves leave their crap on the beach. So I'm just wondering if this bill, it increases the fine for littering within 100 yards. So it seems to me those people who have fireworks displays on the beaches and leave their stuff are going to be subject now to a $4,000 penalty.
But they go back and pick it up, right?
Well, the town of Neskowin is very good about that. I don't know where anybody else is, but I'd sure like the people who do go out and enjoy our beaches on the 4th of July start picking up after themselves. What a mess.
Well, I think if they don't go pick up after themselves, they would be potentially subject to the fine under this bill, and I'm not sure that would be inappropriate.
I think that's a good thing.
I also think that where they intend to go pick it up the next day, like they do in Neskowin, I'd pity the district attorney who would want to try to pursue a charge in that circumstance his re-election campaign.
Yes, there are a lot of people who attend that 4th of July celebration. It's actually pretty fun. But I would just encourage Oregonians to please follow your mother and father's advice and pick up after yourself.
With that, are there any other comments? We have the motion pending. Any objections to the motion?
I only object to my roommates.
Representative Axel,
I'm intrigued by Representative Walker's comment and wondering in response to that, it's the way the Act reads, it's unlawful for any person to commit the offense. It doesn't say a public entity. I don't know if that's a distinction which would help us in this situation.
Well, Representative, if I could respond, the city takes care of, or I don't know if they're an incorporated city or a town or whatever, but they have volunteers that go out and do that. It's just those people who don't participate in the cleanup. I mean, the next day I was surprised to see all the litter. It was pretty substantial, but the community is very good about following up on that. But there are other areas along the coast who do have 4th of July celebrations that are not put on by their communities, and they leave their junk to be washed out to sea. And it's dangerous stuff.
Chair Williams.
Representative Krieger.
This is what you're talking about. Representative Walker takes place at almost every port along the Oregon coast. Some of them actually shoot them out over the ocean or like in the mouth of the Rogue River, and that material then goes out and ends up on the beach. So that is something, and there's no way they're going to pick it up because it doesn't come in all at one place. It's spread out for half a mile down the beach, and that's been going on since I was a kid at Seaside back in the 40s. So I don't know how we're ever going to get a handle on that completely. The stuff that they have access to, they pick it up.
Yeah.
Any further discussion? We have Representative Wilson's motion pending. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing none, the bill moves to the full committee with the... Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was on the adoption of the amendments, right? Now, Representative Wilson.
Now, Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2008 as amended to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Wilson moves House Bill 2008 as amended to the full committee with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Shetterly.
Well, now I'm intrigued by Representative
Krieger's.
You went too far.
Well, yeah, you shoot off, you shoot off a firework over the water, and it lands in the ocean, and it washes up on the shore.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if our DA is really going to prosecute this. No, but then again, should we be passing crimes with the intention that they, or increasing penalty with the intention that they not be prosecuted? What are we doing?
Maybe we're going to have to exempt municipal fireworks.
Well, the I hope not.
I hope not.
The bill actually relates to persons, and so
somebody has lit that fuse.
Yeah. Well.
And oh my God, I don't want to stop these fireworks today because they are really wonderful events for the community. But it just occurred to me. Sorry, Representative Thompson.
Right. It's amazing.
The bonkers.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dingfelter, can you save us?
I don't know about that, but I have another question maybe to stir the pot a little bit more.
Oh, thank you.
Which is...
I'm going to take my jacket off.
And maybe this was discussed or presented during the hearing, but the question I had is how, and this is something already on the book, so like Representative Shetterly said, we're just increasing the penalty, but in regards to the fireworks, you know, trying to figure out who the person was that was responsible when something washes up on the shore. There was probably some discussion about that with the fishermen. I would, by reading through this, that would be a question I would have if something shows up on the shore, unless there is some ID for tying it to the
right.
Person that deposited it there.
No. Your comment is exactly the one that counsel was whispering in my ear just a moment ago, which is that essentially, we're in a situation where there is always going to be a proof issue. And I think that in instances where you have an ability to determine who it was that was responsible, this bill allows for an increased penalty. I mean, the problems that we're all raising at this point are problems that currently exist in the law. Whether the penalty is one of... what is it? We've raised it to $4,000.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so, you know, these municipalities and everyone else who's involved in this practice is probably currently having to address that very same question. So I'm not sure we're really changing anything. But we are also sending a message, I think, to people who are clearly in direct opposition to the law and are using the beaches and the oceans as a dumping ground, and you can make the proof connection, that we're going to say they get a tougher, more stricter penalty. My good friend from the coast has sent me a message saying that community fireworks use biodegradable paper, so those little cardboard tubes all disappear.
Thank you for saving us.
So no worries. I'm with it. I think it's great.
Pass the bill.
And I do too.
So.
I do have one story.
Oh, I don't know. I really don't want to hear it. maybe another time.
Not that again.
Representative Wilson, I think you had a motion to move the bill to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Certainly did, Chair.
I'd like to see if there are any objections to the motion. Seeing none, the bill moves to full committee, and Representative Wilson, I'd like you to carry it, if you'd be so kind.
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Excuse me?
Nothing, nothing.
He said it serves him right.
It's true.
I said it's his right.
It's his right. It's great to be here. We are now going to address House Bill 2404. I'll open a work session on that bill. Counsel.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2404 comes to you from the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee and creates the Oregon Criminal Justice Council, consisting of 20 members. Members include representatives of the different branches of government. They can do that because it's a council that would be advisory in nature. Purpose, among other things, would be to study and make recommendations concerning Oregon's criminal justice system and ensure that resources targeted those offenders who present the greatest risk to the public safety and those offenders who are most likely to reoffend. You have before you the Dash 1 amendments. You remember Phil Lemon had some questions about this, the structure of the bill, and I believe that these amendments take into consideration his concerns. They add at the top certain additional members to the committee, the Superintendent of State Police, the Director of the Oregon Youth Authority. Mm-hmm. They reduce the number of legislators from 3 to 2 from each branch of government. They also add 1 chief of police, 2 representatives of victims' rights groups, and the director of the Community Corrections Agency. And then they also further down make some, rather than mandating certain functions be carrying out, making it discretionary.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor.
This bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, Mr. Chair.
Right. This bill will require a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Mr. Lemon is in the audience, if he'd be willing to come forward for a moment. And I understand, Ms. Osborne, you have a comment. You and Mr. Hauser perhaps both have a comment about this bill. Mr. Hauser says no. Okay. Ms. Osborne, please come forward. Mr. Lemon, you had an opportunity to see the amendments.
Mr. Chair, yes, I have.
Would you go ahead and identify yourself for the record?
Bill Lemon, Director of the Criminal Justice Commission.
Thanks.
I just wanted to clarify that my concerns with the bill were not to reduce the number of legislative members to the council.
That's always a safe thing to say, isn't it, Phil? Appreciate that. Even more so when you really mean it. So
I'm still working on that.
Yeah, I understand.
And, Mr. Chair, if I looked over my notes, it was Representative Bowman's concern that we reduce the number of legislators on the council.
Seriously, Phil, you looked at the amendments. And again, I want to remind the committee what the purpose of this bill is. This bill is not to replace or to substitute the work, the long-term work of the Criminal Justice Commission that Mr. Lemon is the director of and is responsible for staffing. This bill is really to create a limited term, a short-term, broader-based group to attempt to address the sentencing issues and to make recommendations on a limited time, one time, sort of you start at the beginning, you work your way to the end and be done. Not unlike to some degree what was done back in the early 70s, which was the last time, and correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, because you know this history better than I do, but back into the early 70s when John Burns and some of those folks really did the last comprehensive overview of the criminal code. So, essentially, this is that sort of a short-term work group with participants as described here to come in and do that sort of reform recommendation. And I guess I just want to make sure that you think, Phil, that I've adequately described what the intent of the organization would be under House Bill 2404.
Mr. Chair, yes. When I came in to testify earlier with Senator Bryant, what I was trying to do was just explain that prior to the commission being in existence, coming into existence in 1995, we had a Criminal Justice Council that was set up in basically a to represent the constituencies within the public safety system. And what I was trying to do was just to explain that, when this, that 2404 left out in its original version some of those people, such as the Oregon Youth Authority, the Superintendent of State Police, Community Corrections Agencies. And so the dash ones do reflect those changes and also eliminate some of the, I think, the potential conflicts that the, where the council might have repetitive or duplicative duties to that the commission already has.
Right. This, as you'll recall, and I don't think this has been changed in the, we haven't changed the, time period, have we, Mr. Taylor?
No, Mr. Chair.
So this would, so this, organization would essentially terminate because of the repealer that's in there on January 2nd, 2006. So the organization would exist essentially through 2006 with the intention of being done with its business in advance of January 2nd, 2006. So that's essentially the direction that this is headed. It is designed to be a short-term intensive group to address these issues and not to substitute or to there will be a natural interplay between the Criminal Justice Commission, because that's where this group is going to be getting a considerable amount of its data information from as it moves forward. But it's really designed on a broader-based, system-wide analysis. Any other questions? Representative Ackerman.
I'm just going to be the devil's advocate on this one, because, and I don't know what Mr. Lemon's ultimate position is on this, but as I read the House bill and creating the Criminal Justice Council, and I look at the statutes with respect to the duties of the Criminal Justice Commission, I see an awful lot of overlap. I also see overlap in the membership of the council and the commission. And I'm wondering if this just isn't a duplication of services. I don't see the bright line that the chair suggests, that the bill which is before us has some short-term objectives and the work of the commission has long-term objectives. I see the objectives as similar, and I see them as overlapping, and I see this as a duplication of services. And as I said, I'm the devil's advocate upon it, and I think in our times of economic stress that we could probably accomplish the same result by not passing the bill and letting the Criminal Justice Commission do its work under ORS 137-656, which is a very comprehensive mandate.
Representative, if I could sort of address the point, because it was certainly a concern I had as well. The reason that I think this bill and the commission or the council as it's designed in House Bill 2404 is necessary is because the commission is made up of members who are essentially representatives from the, is it the congressional districts, Phil, is that how it's decided?
Not specifically, no, Mr. Chair. It's, the statute requires the members to represent the geographic and political diversity of the state. So
okay.
We have a limit of 4 of the 7 who can belong to the same political party and statewide geographic
right.
diversity.
And the members, the current members of the commission, you just run down the list for us, if you could.
I have them right here.
You have
Terry Timchuck from Portland, who is the state legislative director for Senator Gordon Smith, U.S.
Right.
Senator Gordon Smith. Dale Penn, who's the Marion County District Attorney.
Right.
Tom Leininger is an assistant U.S. attorney based out of Eugene. Bill Gary is a former deputy attorney general for the state of Oregon, who's now in private practice. Linda Moore is kind of the true lay person we have on the commission. And then the governor has just nominated Dan Glode, who's the retired Lincoln County DA, to serve on the commission. And all these folks have been or will be confirmed by the Senate before they are appointed
right.
to the commission.
The point I guess I was attempting to make, Representative Ackerman, is that I believe that what the council adds that the commission doesn't is it brings together a broader group of people representing most of the stakeholders that don't necessarily have a seat at the table, and I say necessarily because some of them may based on who the commission member is at any one time, but most of the stakeholders that are going to have to be addressing and are going to be affected by long-term changes in the policy And it brings them essentially in as a group with a seat at the table in a way that the commission doesn't necessarily do it. And frankly, in my mind, this is almost more political than anything. It creates that critical mass of seats at the table that you have to have sometimes to move a comprehensive policy forward in a way, frankly, that I'm not sure the commission can. And so that's the reason that I think this is actually important, but that's also the reason why I think it has to have a limited duration, because it needs to come together, it needs to establish that critical mass one time, it needs to make its recommendations, and then it needs to dissipate, and then the commission, I think, from that point can go forward and manage the process. But I do think that you don't get critical mass if you don't have a system by which these people have seats at the table that they don't necessarily have based on the way the commission is designed.
If I could just take that point up, because as I read the membership of the commission, it does contain a broad-based representation of the community. And in fact, its mandate is to ensure representation of all segments of the criminal justice system that are affected by the work of the committee. It includes persons who serve by designation, such as the Attorney General, Department of Corrections, Chair of the State Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. And getting on to some of the other stakeholders that might not be at a table like this includes trial judges, judges of the Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, with legislative representation, criminal defense attorneys, sheriffs, county commissioners, victims of crimes, and the public at large. So I think that's a pretty broad membership mandate that and puts all the stakeholders at the same table before the commission. And as I mentioned earlier, some of these positions duplicate in the membership of the council. And I see this becoming quite unwieldy, particularly where you have the overlapping directorships, such as the Attorney General and the corrections people. They're going to actually be performing two functions instead of one, and I don't see how you're going to keep this thing from being not only confusing but bureaucratic. And that's my criticism of the membership requirements,
Mr. Chair. If I'm
in the direction,
I'm going to respond to that.
Please.
I'm not sure which statute you're reading, Representative Ackerman. The commission itself does not have a constituency-based seat system. It is seven members, and the only requirement is the partisan and geographic diversity. You may be reading a statute that says when the commission appoints a subcommittee that the chair shall consider the following people and make sure that everyone's at the table.
Yeah, that's the committees. That's
okay.
Correct.
Those are okay. The existing statutory authority to appoint essentially subcommittees of the full commission.
Right.
I think the difference is partly is the stature that a separate council would bring to this authority, and partly is frankly just a resource issue. We don't have the horses to sit there and do this kind of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the primary benefit that this approach would bring is first elevate the stature, you bring the legislators into the picture, and then thirdly you provide some resources so we have the ability to do the work.
Yeah. Well, I'm certainly willing to defer to the your agency determination on these sorts of things, but I just want to bring these points up because I feel that there is still substantive overlap in your respective missions.
Further discussion.
Chair, I had a question.
Representative Dingfelder.
So, and again, I was not here for the hearing, so I'm a little bit behind the learning curve on this, but I'm just trying to get a better sense of how this group would interact with the commission, and listening to just the questions and discussion here, do you see this more as an advisory council or an advisory body to the commission? Is that, I'm trying to get a sense of what the interaction will be.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dingfelder, I wouldn't say advisory to the commission. It's been a while. I haven't read this bill within the last couple of days, so I may be missing something, but I believe that the intention of this bill is, again, to create a separate body that would have a specific assignment over a limited term that the commission probably has within its general authority right now. And the primary difference is, this, as I said, the stature and the resources. So there is a different way to approach both Representative Ackerman's concerns and what I understand your question to be. I think the biggest difference, again, is that you are providing a focus and elevating the stature of this group to really get that job done and move it off the table. As far as the coordination is concerned, I think my responsibility as the executive director of the commission and staffing the council would be to make sure that that doesn't happen. There's probably one or two people who serve on the commission who may well get appointed to this. And again, my job as staff is to make sure that we don't have those duplications and those roadblocks. So I don't see that as a problem personally.
So the staff, staff will be, will it be overlapping staff from the commission and the council?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Osborne.
For the record, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kathy Osborne, Senior Attorney with Juvenile Rights Project. We are in favor of House Bill 2404. The one concern that we would have is, since there, Mr. Taylor's laughing at me.
Smiling.
Since there.
With you, Kathy, not at you.
Thank you for that. Since the council would be looking at not only adult sentencing, but also juvenile sentencing, which is why the Oregon Youth Authority was added, I think it's important to add both a criminal defense attorney and a prosecutor who has juvenile court experience. I get emails and calls every week from criminal defense attorneys who are representing either juveniles charged as adults under Measure 11 or juveniles in juvenile court who just do not understand how the juvenile system works or how the interplay between the adult system and the juvenile system works. I also have come in contact with many, 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 many district attorneys who have absolutely no idea how the juvenile system works or how the juvenile system and the adult system, the interaction between the two, work. And sometimes the assumptions that are made by these professionals who think they know how the systems work but don't really know how the systems work do more harm to their clients than good. And so that's why I think it's important that that we don't just saddle a district attorney representative and a criminal defense attorney representative with having to know both the adult system and the juvenile system and be able to deal, to be able to consider the interactions between the two and how changing one aspect of one system would affect the other system.
Mr. Lehman, what do you think about that concept?
Mr. Chair, two comments. One way, when the Criminal Justice Council was operating prior to 1995, they had a variety of subcommittees, and that did expand the membership, or at least the people participating in the process. So part of the question is who gets a vote on this group and whether you want to specifically by statute create a structure that accommodates that. In general, I would agree with Ms. Osborne's point that because we have we've kind of blurred the line between the juvenile and the adult systems, particularly as sentencing goes, that relationship probably does call for a little more expertise somewhere in this process. And whether you choose to put, you know, two more people on the council or provide specific authority for a subcommittee system or whether that's even necessary. But I think it's a good point.
Okay. Well, committee, here's what the chair would suggest, is that we adopt the -1 amendments as they're set before us for 2404. And then that we request the amendments that would add Ms. Osborne's comments before we have full committee, because I think considering that one of the places it seems to be we're spending an amazing amount of time is on the juvenile side of the sentencing issues, and that's one of the things that I think this council is frankly designed to help us try to find a solution for. I think her points are well taken. And we'll consider those amendments at the full committee, assuming that the committee here chooses to move the bill. Thank you both for your comments. So with that, the chair would move House Bill 2404, or the -1 amendments to that bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? We've adopted the amendments. The chair would move House Bill 2404 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation, anticipating that we'll adopt those other amendments at the full committee. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Representative Ackerman, are you going to go along?
No, my questions were answered.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good. All right. With that, then, without objection, the bill moves as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. We're now going to go back and open up a work session on House Bill 3594. This was the bill we heard this morning. Ms. Smith is still here in the audience with us. We've had a chance, I think, to ruminate a little bit on her testimony and also with our books and with our understanding of the sentencing processes here, I think, had an opportunity to consider that. So, committee, it would be the chair's motion to move House Bill 3594 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
I just want to add a comment that I didn't add earlier. I'm a cyclist, and this is an issue near and dear to my heart because I did lose a very good friend of mine who was killed by a motorist in my district while she was on her bicycle. And many of us were very concerned about the fact that the sentence was quite light. And so I am supporting this both for safety of cyclists like myself and throughout Oregon.
Thank you, Representative Dingfelder. Any other comments? Representative Vicki Walker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Ms. Smith for driving all the way over here and sticking with us and advocating on behalf of all Oregonians as well as your sister. Thank you.
Anything else? Any objection to the motion that we move it to the full committee with a due pass recommendation? Hearing none, the bill will move. Representative Dingfelder, can I ask you to carry this bill? Thank you. We will now open a work session on House Bill 2930. Council?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2930 creates a crime of cockfighting. It's based on the dogfighting statute. We have a series of amendments in front of you, the dash one and the dash two. And I do have a dash three on the way, but they will not be here until next week. The dash one came from the proponents of the bill, if I remember correctly, back to our hearing, and it deals with the issue of constructive possession means an exercise of dominion and control over location and treatment of property. Peace officer having jurisdiction may, upon probable cause to believe that a bird is a fighting bird as defined, take constructive possession, and then other aspects the police officer may follow. The dash two amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and address the concerns that were raised here in the hearing about some of the language. Let me go through them if I could. In page one of the printed bill at line seven, delete bread and insert reared. There was concerns that bread would get you into problems with the statute if you were merely raising the bird for the purposes of showing the bird, and we heard quite a bit of testimony like that. Reason we use reared is because reared is now used in 167.355, where it talks about customary practice of breeding and rearing. So my assumption is that rearing means something after the bird has been hatched from an egg, and it deals with how you then train and treat the bird after that. Then going further down in there, on line 13, deleting if the person knowingly, and the sentence would read now that a person commits a crime of cockfighting if the person owns, possesses, keeps, breeds, trains, buys, sells, or advertises, otherwise offers to sell a fighting bird, knowing that the bird is intended to be used for cockfighting, and then put an or in there. And then on B, the person knowingly promotes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reason for that is there was a concern that you knowingly possess a bird, for example, that is a fighting bird, but you plan to show them because of the particular breed. And we heard testimony that basically any male chicken, I guess, can be trained to fight. So your purpose is like a pit bull, a Staffordshire Terrier, you're raising the dog for showing. It'd be equivalent to the raising a cock the same way. And it was concerned that the mere fact that you were doing it and knew that the dog had potential for fighting would get the cock would get you into problems. What this language would say is the bird is intended to be used for cockfighting. So you, there would be an element of showing that. The amendment that's on the way, we go over to page 2, and there was some concerns here, and I think the committee could look at this probably in the alternative. Page 2, section 3.1b, there were some concerns that you may have material here, for example, a cage that could be used, and I don't, it would depend on the facts and circumstances, but you would have a cage that would, could have dual purposes, in the sense, in, excuse me. So I've talked with legislative counsel's office, and I talked with Representative Shetterly, was the possibility of on line 8 after equipment adding intended for use of training or use in training. The other alternative may be to simply take that particular paragraph out. It's possible if there were prosecution there may be overbreadth and vagueness problems, because if you look at the rest of the bill, for example, gas, slashes, and other sharp implements, which really have, from what I could gather from testimony, really have but one purpose, are clearly things that would are in the bill now. They're a more serious penalty. If, in fact, if there is an overbreath problem here and a problem in writing the statute, the one clear way would be to take it out. So that there will be an alternative for the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wong.
This is a drafting question, but if you look at the proposed amendment to 2930 at line 5, I'm a little worried about the use of the word cockfighting or supplying the bird, knowing that the bird is intended to be used for cockfighting. Supplying is an odd usage. I'm wondering if delivering the bird might be better, because supplying grammatically means supplying what to the bird or supplying the bird to whom, and there's no direct object there. It's somewhat ambiguous.
Representative Lowe, my understanding is that in you're referencing the Dash 3 Amendment. The Dash 3 Amendment has come forward actually from the proponents in an effort to address the concerns raised by some of the opponents to this bill, that it was overbroad. And as you read it, it essentially says that the section which creates the which essentially creates the criminal activity says that it does not apply to the owning, possessing, keeping, breeding, buying, selling, advertising, or otherwise offering for sale of a bird for purposes other than training the bird as a fighting bird, using or intending to use the bird in cockfighting, or supplying the bird knowing that the bird is intended to be used in cockfighting. This language came from the federal language that has been considered by Congress. Legislative Council altered that language to make it consistent with our form and style, and it was Legislative Council's choice to use the word supplying, as I recall, in the language. So that's a Legislative Council's addition based on the way we apparently phrase things in the ORS. So I'm not sure I necessarily agree with you about the ambiguity of supplying. We could certainly pull out the book and look up what supplying means, but as I read that, that didn't raise an alarm bell with me. I think we use supplying, don't we, Mr. Taylor, in some of the criminal statutes with respect to other contraband?
Mr. Chairman, as a committee, I'm not sure, but I could do a word search on the computer. My assumption is it'd be safe to say that we do.
I think that's probably why they
chose it. I have seen it, and it's irritated me before, but it
I looked under the drug statute.
It's a direct conflict between my legal training and my teacher training.
Well, as you know, that we don't always apply the same rules of grammar in statutory drafting as we do in English.
Written class. Enough briefs.
I just think the problem might be that if you have delivery, it implies you're giving up the bird. If you're supplying it, you might stay there or take it back.
Right.
And I think that's the
just
more
loan
expensive
it for the purposes of a fight.
Which I think we should prefer.
Right. So you would
okay,
agree
that
supplying is the better
I think
better
so.
Word.
It's
yeah.
a broader word, I think, than just mere delivery.
Mr. Chair?
Representative
Shetterly. I withdraw my objection.
Do I understand then from council that the dash threes are alternative to the dash twos?
Chair, members of the committee, I've heard about the dash threes, but this is the first time I've seen them.
They seem to be. They both get at the same
yes,
thing.
Yes, they do. But I frankly hadn't had an opportunity to compare them.
Can I ask who's the author of the dash two and the dash three?
The dash twos were essentially the committee's effort through Mr. Taylor to address concerns that certain committee members had raised during the hearings. The dash threes come to us from the proponents who actually went in search of a solution to some of the opponents' objections to the bill and found the language that was in the federal act and brought it forward.
Could I add something, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just as a process issue, if I go down and request an amendment, they come back through the committee.
Yeah.
If a person goes to a member, if I even call, I call the legislative council's office, they won't even acknowledge that someone's requested an amendment, so they go back through the member. And that's how I believe this amendment's got here.
Okay.
Representative Krieger.
No, Mr. Chair. In here, where it talks about manufacture, buy, sell, barter, exchange, or possess. And advertise for sale a gaff or slasher. That means that I might have my grandfather's 45 Colt and his old saddle and his old whaling harpoon, and I may have his box of cockfighting equipment, which is a family heirloom, and I would be in violation. Is that what it says?
Representative Shetterly.
I think it does. I think that was one of the other objections to the bill. And I suppose if we really want to move forward with this, we could attach the same conditions to that section as, at least conceptually, what Mr. Taylor has in the dash two, you know, that you possess these things intending that they be used for cockfighting or something, so that we're talking about active use for cockfighting purposes. I think there was testimony about these things being in people's collections and otherwise possession. That's separable from the actual use in cockfighting.
There may even be someone had the opportunity at an auction or to buy a set of these because they thought was part of the history.
Again, yeah, Mr. Chair, I think you know we could probably save that section just by adding something to the effect that intending that the gaff slash or other implement be used in cockfighting.
And you're in subsection three, is that right?
I'm sorry, no, I'm in 2.1e. Section three has its own problems, but it could be solved the same way, I suppose.
Mr. Chairman, as the committee says, Representative Shelley suggesting as we go over to page one after the bird and before period with the intent that the implements be used for cockfighting?
Conceptually, yeah.
Used for, used in. Yeah.
So can somebody read that sentence for me?
Well, I think it would read something like this, Representative, just as a conceptual. Manufactures, buys, sells, barters, exchanges, possesses, advertises or otherwise offers to sell a gaff slasher or other sharp implement designed for attachment to a fighting bird with the intent that the implements be used in cockfighting. I mean, that would be the,
yeah.
You know, they might wordsmith it a little bit differently, but that would be the intent. Other comments on any of the versions of the amendments?
Sure.
Representative Shetterly.
Well, I think we need to make the same conceptual approach to Section 3 then, because that deals with equipment as well that's even less directly tied to cockfighting.
I think we'd want to attach the same condition somehow. I'm not sure how to...
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Commissioner, Mr. Chairman, are you referring to this paragraph does not apply to a GAF, or are you referring to the whole?
I'm referring to the whole. The manufacturers buy, sells, et cetera. Equipment for training or handling a fighting bird or for enhancing the fighting ability of a fighting bird, that doesn't really get at the person's intent who possesses it. It just gets at the potential use of the equipment, and I think we ought to attach the same condition of in person's intent that that equipment be used for cockfighting as we did in the previous section.
Chair, members of the committee, Representative Chevalier, I did ask Legislative Council's office for an amendment that after on line 8, after equipment, would add intended for use in, and then after or intended for use in.
That would,
but I did not, I don't know about the next, how it relates to the next sentence, as it relates back to subsection E either.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think the reason that first sentence, that last sentence, the paragraph does not apply to GAF or slasher is because that's a Class C felony,
yeah,
covered under,
yeah,
Section 2,
right,
so you can't be both a C felony and an A misdemeanor.
Right.
So
that's a specifically enumerated C felony.
So I think those would help. And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Shadowley.
And one thing that I think I like the dash threes better than the dash twos, except that the dash twos do change the word bred to reared, and I think that's a helpful change. So I'd like to preserve that from the dash twos.
Okay.
But, Mr. Chair, if we do that, we should also change, I think, to be consistent in the statutory language, breeds on line 14 to rears as well, since we're taking breeds out of line 7, and then looking at the dash 3s on line 3 where it says breeding, I think we ought to change that to rearing too, so we're using the same language throughout the statute.
The first one, I didn't catch the second one.
The second one was in the dash 3 amendments on line
3,
changing breeding to rearing. Okay, so now let me see if I can do this, colleagues. We have the dash 1 amendments, which were brought forward, as I understand, by the proponents, in conjunction, I believe, with some of the law enforcement community that testified, agreed that they were in support of the bill with the adoption of the dash 1s. So we would adopt the dash 1s. As they stand, we would then abandon the dash twos, with the exception of one amendment, which would be the keeping the reference changing bred to rears, and we've done that in, I think, three particular spots within the bill. And then we would adopt the dash threes and then a couple of conceptual amendments.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, adopting the dash threes, but
changing breeding to rearing. And then in the bill itself, on line 7, we would change the word bred to reared. On line 14, we would change the word breeds to rears. On line 1 of the second page of the bill, we would add the language conceptually with the intent that the implements be used in cockfighting, and again on line 9 on page 2, we would add the language after the period, or before the period, with the intent that the implement be used in cockfighting, or that the equipment be used in cockfighting. So those would be the two essential conceptual amendments that would adopt. So that's the markup as we're looking at it now. Are there other comments or questions by the committee?
What a bill.
What I think we want to do to make sure that we get this all right is we're in work session, and there are not changes to the dash one. So the chairman, to get that out of the way, is going to move the adoption of the dash one amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Dash ones are adopted. Chair would also move the adoption of the dash 3 amendments with the additional conceptual amendment of striking the word breeding on line 3
and inserting the word rearing on line three. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Okay, so the dash threes are adopted as conceptually amended by that one change. That then puts us into the text of the bill, and what I think I'd like to do here, frankly, since we have two changes on the first page of the bill as conceptual amendments and two changes on the second page of the bill, which would add complete clauses of new sentences, would be to allow Mr. Taylor to get legislative counsel to draft those amendments separately and to have those amendments considered by the full committee if there's general agreement to them conceptually here in front of the committee today.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Vicki Walker.
I apologize, but I got lost along the way somewhere. Did you mention in Section 3, Sub B, that we would be making that conceptual change to the intent?
I did.
Okay.
Counsel?
Chairman of the committee, so you want to add language there as opposed to taking that section out?
Yeah, I think the intent would be to add the language.
I do have that language. It's being drafted in legislative counsel's office.
Okay.
Both for subsection 2E and for subsection 3B?
Just for 3B, Mr. Chair.
Just for 3B, so, okay. Well, we'd want to add that sentence as well on,
okay,
on 3E.
I'm sure Chuck Taylor is listening. And
I'm sure he's working on it even as we speak. Hello, Chuck, wherever you are. So okay, with that, it would be the chair's intention, if we have general, I guess I want to hear from the committee about any concerns before Representative Krieger.
I want to take these amendments and look at them, kind of put them together and mentally sit down and look at what they really do.
Okay.
And I'll go along with moving it to the full committee with regulations. I want to look at it when we get there.
Fair enough.
Sure. I'll look for us the same. I think this feels better. I want to see how it looks when I see it in front of me, but I'll be glad to support the motion to full today.
Okay. Anybody else?
I'm just really glad everybody hung in there on this one because this was a very difficult place to get to. I appreciate that.
One last thing.
Representative Shetterly.
Did we get some definitive answer to the question about the forfeiture provision of this and how it squares now under Measure 3 and the bill that we passed this week on the floor conforming our forfeiture statutes? Maybe we could ask counsel to examine into that too between now and full.
That's an excellent idea. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, we are in work session. I guess I'll do this since I'm the only one who can probably explain it. We've adopted the dash ones and we've adopted the dash threes as conceptually amended. We have other amendments that we are going to consider at the full committee. So as amended, the chair would move House Bill 2930 to the full committee for consideration. Is there any further discussion? Any objection? Okay, the bill will move to the full committee, and we'll have that up at the next full committee meeting.
Oh.
Hopefully we'll have answers by that time. We'll now open a work session on House Bill 2951.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to like saying this. House Bill 2951 is a gut and stuff.
Yeah.
It creates the crime of grooming. The amendments create the crime of grooming a child for unlawful sexual activity. It's in lieu of another bill we had before us earlier that was too narrow for the relating clause. We have the dash three amendments in front of us, which take care of some of the problems that we had with the dash two amendments. And they read, a person commits the crime of grooming a child for unlawful sexual activity if the person knowingly furnishes a child under 16 years of age any visual depiction of sexually explicit conduct for the purpose of predisposing the child to engaging in unlawful sexual activity, sets a penalty as a Class A misdemeanor. What this did from the last amendments, it says a child under 16 as opposed to a child under 14. And then we added, purposes. I think that's it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Shetterly. This started out as your bill. How do you feel about it today?
How long do I have to decide? I don't know. I'll go with the flow. Who's looked at these dash three amendments? Have we got any?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Committee, there was one change that I forgot from the dash TIF because they were put in a different place by Legislative Counsel's office, and that's knowingly on line 7,
yeah.
Knowingly furnishes. So two changes, 14 to 16, and the knowing element added. I should maybe even say clarified.
Mr. Chair, I see I did send a copy of the dash two amendments to Dale Penn after the last meeting and asked for his comments on some of the suggestions. I just wanted to get a DA's perspective on this thing. I've not heard back, so I don't know.
You want to bring Mr. Pedanke up?
Yeah.
Sure.
He's sitting back there hoping we don't, but...
How about Mr. Hauser, too?
Sure. Come on up, Bill.
Guilt by association.
My notes indicate that Mr. Pedanke drafted the dash twos, and Mr. Hauser was neutral on the dash twos and had technical concerns, so...
Good morning, gentlemen.
I hear from you both.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, David Pedanke, ACLU of Oregon. We have no objection to the changes that have been made between the dash twos and the dash threes. We continue to believe that this proposal is constitutional under the Oregon Bill of Rights and under the Federal Bill of Rights and would be a more productive way for the committee to go than the original House Bill 2413.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bill Hauser. I'm with the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. We are neutral on the bill. We believe that the addition of the mental element online, I think it's 7, is a positive addition to the bill, and we still remain neutral.
And, Mr. Chair, again, David Pedanke, my understanding is that this bill the District Attorneys Association is aware of the bill and the amendments, and it's not on their radar screen.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Sherrill.
Well, one thing we could do, we could go ahead and move this thing to the fall and just invite Mr. Penn if he wants to come in and say something or not at the full committee. And as it occurs to me, we could also, and I know that Mr. Pedanke's blanched at this, we could also move the original bill. The original bill makes the fix in the current statute, furnishing obscene materials to a minor, that would be anybody under 18. It makes the fix that the Court of Appeals invited us to make. Now, Mr. Pedanke says it's not enough, and next time it's challenged, that statute will fail again or on another grounds. But the original bill gets at the issue that the court in its 95-page opinion or whatever said was the problem with the bill. And there's nothing that says that you can't move both of these at the same time, so that if the original bill fails in its purpose to save the statute as it exists, this gets at something else and will still be in the books.
Mr. Pedanke, I struggle a little bit with the way we've written this now. I mean, it seems, and I sense that one of the reasons the DAs aren't here is because they sort of think that this bill isn't going to actually produce anything for them. It's not going to really give them any hook. I struggle to know how you would actually get to the second part of what's required here, which is proving that the conduct was for the purpose of predisposing the child to engage in unlawful sexual activity.
Mr. Chair, again, David Pedanke, when I had a brief discussion with Mr. Penn, his reaction to that was that we would probably need a confession, but that there may be circumstantial evidence that would be sufficient to prove this charge. The problem with House Bill 2413 is that it is attempting to save a structure that is not directed at the effects of expression, but is intended to prevent expression.
If I can interrupt you, Mr. Benneke, I'd beg to differ. It's not intended to stop the expression. It's intended to stop the providing of that information to a minor.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And that's different.
But it is the structure of that statute, we believe, is it's built on language that predates Miller versus California. It's not even, we believe, constitutional under a federal analysis, much less in terms of a vagueness challenge. And the fix that House Bill, the quote-unquote fix that House Bill 2413 would make, would highlight the vagueness problems with the statute. And the problem with moving forward with both, with due respect to the chair and Representative Shetterly, is that it would encourage district attorneys to continue to use a statute in charging that is inherently flawed and that will result in convictions inevitably being challenged and overturned at great expense to the state and at some expense to the public, rather than having a statute that we can have some confidence, I believe, is constitutional and would be useful in many of these cases.
Mr. Chair?
Let me take a shot at it.
Then I want him.
You guys move back.
Get out of the way.
David. Mr. Taylor's lining up as well. So, David, I guess one of the struggles that you and I have on this issue is sort of starting from the general premise that the Supreme Court took a wrong turn with State versus Henry and has sort of continued down that road. But beyond that, you're essentially saying, as I understand the ACLU's objections to the original bill as it was put forward by Representative Shetterly, that we are unable as a state legislature to pass a statute which simply makes it unlawful to provide sexually explicit materials to a minor. Is that what you're saying? I mean, it's unconstitutional for us to make a law that says that you cannot provide sexually explicit materials to a minor.
Mr. Chair, the problem in theory, I believe you could probably do that consistent with Article 1, Section 8. The problem you get into is deciding who is going to be subject to that offense and who isn't. The current statute in Chapter 167 is subject to affirmative defenses that use language which, let me back up, Mr. Chair. In the most recent State versus Maynard decision, what the court, if you look at the language of 167.065, which is the core of the statute, it does not have the kinds of limitations that would be required under the federal constitution. Let's talk federal analysis for a moment. Because I think in essence, Mr. Chair, your position is with regard to obscenity regulation that at least with regard to materials provided to minors, that there is an historical exception. And let's assume that Article 1, Section 8 were not a problem, and that you could go with the federal analysis. The the specific language of 167.065 does not pass muster under the First Amendment.
But you're tying my hands with 167, and I'm not asking you about 167.
Okay.
I'm asking you a straight question. Does this legislature...
Theoretically?
No, not even theoretically. Can I put it in a whole different chapter? Can I pass a statute out of this legislature, signed by the governor, prohibiting the supplying of sexually explicit materials to a minor? That simple. Not tied to 167, just a statute that says, thou shalt not supply sexually explicit materials to a minor, or that is a crime.
Mr. Chair, I think that a statute without exceptions would be subject to a challenge based on overbreadth, because there are materials that the definition how you define sexually explicit.
Sure. We'll back out health books. We'll back out information provided by a medical person. You know, we'll make some of those exceptions.
Once you do that, once you start making exceptions, and you try to make an exception, for example, for the language of, you know, what I think subsection 3 of 167.085, which are the affirmative defenses, was trying to get at, was artistic material, literature, great art, if you will, that should be exempt from that statute. And as soon as you start going down that road, you run up against an almost impossible task of crafting exceptions to the statute that are going to pass muster under Article 1, Section 8.
If I can interrupt you, your answer really is no.
I believe the answer is no, yes.
Your answer is no. Representative Sherrill.
Well, thank you.
At least not one, Mr. Chair, one final comment. At least not one that this legislature would be comfortable in voting for, because of the material that it would cover that the majority of legislatures would believe should not be covered.
Representative Sherrill.
Well, I hearken back to yesterday's testimony from Judge Gillette that sometimes the legislature should test the limits of the Constitution. I mean, that's appropriate for the legislature to do that from time to time. And, David, I take it on faith. You made a comment in your testimony that if we move both of these, let's say, that prosecutions under 167, the statute that's amended in my other bill, would, you said, inevitably be challenged and overturned. And I take it on faith that they will inevitably be challenged, because you can do that. It's ultimately for the court to determine whether or not it'll be overturned. And I don't know that I just am ready to run up the white flag on that issue, especially going back to the point that, what's my other bill number?
2413.
Thank you. 2413. It follows the precise methodology outlined by the Court of Appeals in what the legislature could do to save the statute. And I guess, you know, being invited by the Court of Appeals, although maybe not as explicitly as that, but being invited by the Court of Appeals to fix the statute in Chapter 167 and thereby save it from its constitutional defect, I'm inclined to do that. And I think, you know, appropriately move this out at the same time, and we've given ourselves and prosecuting attorneys a fallback, so that if we lose the one, the other is still there in the books. I think it does make sense to move them in tandem.
Representative Ackerman?
Some questions of Mr. Fedenke. Okay. Let me try this and see if we can save the constitutionality, and I'm looking at Section 2.
Which of which bill, Representative Ackerman?
2951.
The original, you're looking at the dash three amendments, Representative Ackerman?
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ackerman, I don't think anyone is arguing that the dash three amendments have a constitutional problem
right,
at this point. What we are disagreeing about is whether the original bill that gave rise to these amendments has a constitutional problem, which was House Bill 2413, which is currently in between this subcommittee and the full committee.
And the reason that Representative Ackerman, that we don't have that bill in front of us is because at one point we chose, the relating clause was not sufficient to accept the amendments, and so we moved into this bill for purposes of the proverbial gut and stuff. So we don't have that bill in front of us for the rest of us to read. I think what I'm going to do is ask Mr. Taylor to put that on at the full committee. It's gone out of sub, so we just have to schedule it. I am concerned, frankly, about, I guess my concern with the dash three amendments to 2951 and the concept of 2951 in general is that we're sort of satisfying ourselves with some thing that in the end isn't really going to be an extra bullet in the battle here, as the two witnesses who are before us today indicated that, and maybe Mr. Hauser, you didn't indicate it yet, but you nodded that really the DAs have essentially said that the only way they'd ever get to this typically is if somebody actually confessed that the reason that they were supplying this information was to try to get the person predisposing the child to engage in unlawful sexual activity. So the odds of that happening are relatively slim. I mean, it's something. Maybe it's worth having on the books. But my frustration is that we once again have sort of ran into this situation. And I'll pose this question to you, Mr. Fedenke. If would it be unlawful to keep a 13-year-old out of a porn shop? In your mind, is that unconstitutional?
No, Mr. Chair.
Based on what?
Based on the state's general powers to I think the key is how the statute is written.
If they can go in a comic book store, and right next door is a porn shop.
You don't have to get that far, Mr. Chair, because one of the cases under Chapter 167.065, in fact, was a comic book store that had some adult material under the counter. And there was a case back in Ashland a few years ago in which a comic book store owner was charged under the portion of this statute in 167 that had already been held unconstitutional. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, for interrupting you.
The question gets back to what our ability is. And this, I think, ends up being the ultimate failing of how our court has interpreted Article 1, Section 8, is that our hands are essentially tied from being able to make at times a content-based distinction. And my argument, and you know my argument, has always been, with respect to the protection of minors, I think that is an appropriate historical exception, that you can go back to the territorial legislatures of this state before the adoption of our Constitution, where they regulated that material. But the point is that our hands are essentially tied, and I'm frankly not convinced that we could support, under the analysis that you provide this committee, a ban on allowing 13-year-olds from entering porn shops because it's a content-based determination.
Mr. Chair, I believe that the command of Article 1, Section 8 is for this body to focus in on the effect that it is attempting to restrict, that it is attempting to punish. If the effect is offending someone, then this body is moving beyond its constitutional authority. You cannot outlaw communication in order to prevent someone from being offended by that communication. You can prohibit activities that have specific negative effects that damage individuals. The Dash 3 amendments that we, the Dash 2 amendments and the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2951 focus in on a particular effect that I have been told is the primary purpose of prosecutions under ORS 167.065. Now, if this committee has a problem with the level of proof that's required, or some other problem, then focus in on that effect.
But you're saying that you don't think we've got the ability to acknowledge that providing sexually explicit materials to a minor has a negative effect?
Not in and of itself, because Chapter 167 has all kinds of exceptions when it's okay and when the vast majority of Oregonians would agree it's okay to furnish sexually explicit material to minors. As long as it's done for the right reasons, it's okay. It's like burning the flag. It's okay to burn a flag if it's old and tattered. That's the way Congress says you're supposed to get rid of a flag that's old and tattered. But if you burn it for political reasons, then folks think it should be criminal.
Don't muddy my pornography with your flag burning. Representative or counsel, you have a question.
Mr. Fidanke, if we wrote a statute that basically said you could not furnish material to a minor, an adult could not furnish material to a minor, where the conduct being shown was sexual penetration, and we put an exception for medical texts and sex education, do you feel that would be unconstitutional?
It is difficult for me to respond to that without looking at all of the other kinds of concerns that might arise, Mr. Chair and Council. Short answer is, I don't know.
Mr. Chairman of the Committee, Mr. Fidanke, I take it your main concern with the current statute is particularly the word nudity. Because, for example, it could be Michelangelo's David or something. I take it that would be your main concern, because that would include
there are
works that would be considered artistic.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Taylor, there are, in this area, you are on the prongs of two constitutional problems. One is overbreath.
Mm-hmm.
Reaching expression that is absolutely constitutionally protected. On the other hand, the problem is vagueness.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with the amendments to House Bill 2413 is that they might cure the overbreath problem, but they create and exacerbate the vagueness problem. The proposal that you're suggesting, I would have to run by some folks to get a better sense of whether it would run afoul of either of those.
Mr. Chairman, let me add one additional element to Mr. Fidanke. What happens if we also put in there sadomasochistic abuse, and that's defined means flagellation or torture by or upon a person who is nude or clad in undergarments or is revealing a bizarre costume of the conditions of being fettered, bound, or otherwise physically restrained on that part of one so clothed? Would that have a overbreath of vagueness problem, and if so, could it be tightened up to? Would that be a question that you'd feel more comfortable bringing back to?
Well, perhaps we should have this conversation off the record, Mr. Chair. There are exceptions in Chapter 163, which is where the Dash 3 amendments would be inserted, and those exceptions are contained in 163.682, include many of the things that you've been talking about, as well as others.
Okay. We will, it's always a fascinating discussion, one that I remain interested in. Mr. Hauser, I'm not going to let you get away entirely without saying anything. Do you agree or disagree with everything Mr. Fedanky has said?
We've taken a neutral position on that.
Okay, is there any further discussion by the committee? If not, we'll...
So your inclination is not to move this? Again, I think the strategy would be to move them both together, but...
Okay, we're in work session, Representative Shetterly.
I'll move, at least till we get these together to look at in the full committee, the -3 amendments to House Bill 2951.
Representative Shetterly has moved the -3 amendments to House Bill 2951. Is there any discussion?
Could I ask a question of you?
You could.
Thank you. I think I agree with what you're trying to do in principle. I think we should take steps to protect children. I have a strong interest in art, and particularly historic art, old things, 18th century woodblock prints, Asian ones. And there's a whole genre of them that depict the sexual act in between fully clad adults, kimono-clad adults, but the convention, the communication convention that this event is taking place involves entirely curled toes between the participants. These are truly gorgeous woodblock prints, and they do talk about a cultural convention, and they talk about activities in the court of the imperial palaces and that sort of thing. Are those among the things that you would think would be covered by such a prohibition? Is that the goal, to prevent children from studying or being exposed to this kind of information about our culture?
No. I'm happy to talk to you about it further. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm obviously not targeting, in my view, the artistic issue. I think the concern is that we have essentially opened the door in Oregon to as a result of State versus Henry, an unfettered ability, essentially, for this material. And look at the growth of the industry that's taken place in our state on a per capita basis. It's greater than anywhere in the nation. And I do think that eventually does have an effect. I don't think maybe a few of you wouldn't, but I think most of us would agree that this material in the hands, and I'm talking about the stuff that you and I both would call pornography. Let's not do this now because we're running late and I want to get everybody out. But I'm happy to engage this discussion further at the full committee or with you and I personally or individually on the floor at some point. Is that fair?
Sure.
Okay. Appreciate that. Representative Shetterly's motion was to adopt the -3 amendments to 2951. Is there any objection? Representative Shetterly?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill, this is a moving motion. Moving across it. Move House Bill 2951 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Shetterly has moved House Bill 2951 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to know why Ray Wilkerson is sitting in the back of the room for this. He enjoys pornography.
Oh, great. Now that's on the web now, Ray. I just hope you know that.
He's shaking his head.
Thankfully, the speech and debate clause protects Representative Ackerman from any libel.
It was Krieger, I think.
Representative Krieger, I'm sorry. It protects Representative Ackerman, too. Any objection to moving the bill to the full committee with a due pass recommendation? Hearing none, the bill will move to the full committee.
What I really want to see out loud is guys that take pictures of kids in their neighborhood to engage in that.
I think that's
criminal. It is criminal, but you know what?